summer with a teenage diplomat.
All right, I think that's appropriate, actually. Little Springsteen, as momentarily we're going to have a couple of transplanted New York area, New Jersey area folks on the program as we lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. The MLB trade deadline has just graduated from buzz to nuts. Who's in, who's out, lot to discuss. Let's get to it. Our guest here, courtesy of our friends at the Believe Network, he hosts a podcast called Cerullo Sports Talk. Learn more, keep up on Twitter. The handle is at the Joe Cerullo. Joe, much appreciate you taking some time today. How's life treating you?
Steve, thanks so much for having me, man. Life's great. How did you know that I was a huge Springsteen fan? He was my first concert when I was 13 years old.
And how long ago was that? Date yourself.
That was 11 years ago. I'm 24 years old, another East Coast transplant from Long Island to Los Angeles. Just moved out here to Cali in April, but still keeping up to date on all things New York sports and all things MLB. You know, in addition to hosting Cerullo Sports Talk, I also host Believe in Queens, a Mets podcast on the Believe Network with my co-host Wardy NYM and former Mets catcher Anthony Record.
Whoa. By the way, to date myself, the first time I saw Springsteen was for the River Tour at Nassau Coliseum in 1980. So
that's amazing. I love it, man. Yeah, there is no performer out there. I don't care how old he is. You know, he could be 75 going on 25 as far as I'm concerned. There's no one like Bruce.
Good call. Good call. So growing up on the island, I'm curious. I know you're a Mets fan. Down the line, kind of Jets, Nets, Islanders, or did you spill over to any of the other boroughs?
Yeah, so I'm Mets and Giants, actually. You know, I know typically it's Mets, Jets, Yankees, Giants, but my family was originally Brooklyn Dodgers and the Giants. So I'm a Mets and Giants fan. Those are my two diehard teams. And then I'm also a Knicks fan and a casual New Jersey Devils fan. I actually didn't pick up on the Isles Whoa. Or the Rangers when it comes to hockey.
Blasphemous, I tell you. So I've got to just get the story from the misery of the Long Island Expressway to the equally miserable traffic on the 10 or 405. What got you from the 516 to Southern California?
Well, you know, it was this job with Believe. Not only am I a content creator and a host with the company, but I'm also a full-time talent manager. So I'm in charge of signing other hosts to our network as well, you know, staffing all of our team-specific shows as well as our more national shows. And, you know, I've known our CEO, Bron Huesenstam, for about 4 to 5 years. I met him at the first Super Bowl I covered, which was Super Bowl 52. In Minneapolis, and we became friends and stayed in touch, and he was ready to bring me on into a full-time role after this year's Super Bowl Radio Row, of course, out here in Los Angeles. And when the opportunity presented itself, I jumped on it. I was working full-time in the tech industry, living in Manhattan, you know, paying way too much for a shoebox apartment like everyone does in Manhattan. And so, yeah, the chance to come out here and really go from, you know, working full-time and podcasting at 2 a.m. to you know, making this my career full-time in sports media at 23 years old at the time. It was something I just couldn't say no to.
Nah, that's awesome. It's a great story. So before we get into the moves, you mentioned you're a Mets guy. Let's start on 41 Seaver Way. You know, this season, still up in the East, kind of think give me your evaluation of how the rotation has held up, and I guess what a jolt they're about to get if hopefully DeGrom is all healed up.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I'm praying that DeGrom looks the way he did last season before his injury, when throughout the first 3 months he was on pace to, you know, compete with all of the records Bob Gibson set in 1968 that, of course, resulted in the mound being lowered. You know, if DeGrom looks anything like he did last year, then, you know, this rotation is in good hands. But you got to give these guys credit. Guys like Taijuan Walker, guys like Carlos Carrasco have really stepped up in not only Jake's absence, but in Max Scherzer's absence for the 6 weeks that he was on the shelf. You know, this whole team, and a lot of it is a credit to Buck Showalter and, you know, just the stable, consistent, calming presence that he brings in that locker room and in that dugout. This whole team has the next man up mentality. And so, you know, with Jake being gone for over half the season, it's just been next guy up, whether it's guys who were supposed to be in the back end of the rotation, like Walker or Carrasco, or guys that weren't in the original rotation, you know, guys like David Peterson, who has done really, you know, he's struggled lately moving to the bullpen, but he's done wonders as a starter this year. And guys like, you know, Tylor Megill, who of course had that terrific April before he ran into some injuries of his own. You know, it's really just all year long, it's been next man up for these Mets, and it's been so much fun to watch.
Yeah, by the way, David Peterson, former Oregon Duck, and as a Giants fan, you got Kayvon Thibodeau, another Duck. So, yeah, you're wired into Oregon. So, today's moves, and you and I were texting about it. When I saw the Brewers traded Josh Hader to the Padres, I was like, what the hell, man? But then you see Taylor Rogers, a prospect, another righty, Denielson Lamet. So as the dust settles and you look at this deal between San Diego and Milwaukee, what are you liking from the Brewers' side? What are you liking from San Diego's side?
Yeah, man, I had the same reaction as you. I saw that deal and I was like, what? Is Milwaukee trying to give Pujols and Molina like a parting gift, trying to hand them the NL Central? And then you know, we looked more into it, and to me, it's a great deal for the Brewers. Look, Josh Hader, you know, I'm not ready to write him off because he had an awful month of July with an ERA over 12. Prior to that, he had an incredible 13-month stretch. Of course, started the year with, I believe, 19 scoreless innings this season, but, you know, late last year, he was lights out as well. You know, I think it was time for a change of scenery, though. He's told the Brewers he doesn't want to pitch more than an inning, and, you know, for a guy who frankly, hasn't been good for the past month to come out with all these demands, and then you know he's going to command top dollar as a free agent. I don't blame Milwaukee for getting something in return, and they got a lot in return. You know, Taylor Rogers, he is second only to Hader in saves in the National League. He's probably not even going to be their closer. He's probably going to be a lefty specialist, maybe the eighth inning guy, and he's a damn good guy to have in that role because Milwaukee already has Devin Williams, who I think is right behind Edwin Diaz. You know, you can look at Devin Williams or maybe Ryan Helsley with the Cardinals as the second and third best relievers in the National League. Williams, to me, is actually a better reliever than even Hader is. So the Brewers have a really, really good embarrassment of riches at the back end of their bullpen. You mentioned Lamet. This is a guy who I know was a shortened season but finished fourth in Cy Young voting in 2020. From 2019 to 2020, averaged 12.5 Ks per nine. So this is a guy who's got really good stuff. If Milwaukee could tap into it, can be a back-end starter, can be a reliever. And then the two prospects, Robert Gasser, you know, his last name's Gasser. The guy throws gas, and he throws from the left side, which is always scarier. Also has really plus off-speed stuff for the seventh-ranked prospect in the Padres farm system. And then the guy who, you know, if you're just looking at rankings, maybe you're not tapped into the Padres farm system, Esturi Ruiz, the outfielder, he's ranked their 28th best prospect, but the guy has jumped from AA to the bigs this season, and in the minors, combined AA, AAA, was hitting .333 with 15 homers, so he's got some pop. He hits for contact. I think Ruiz is a really underrated piece of this trade. I love it for Milwaukee.
Talking MLB trade deadline, Joe Cirillo, I guess I could say, of the eponymous Sports Talk pod on the Believe Network. Time to get selfish. I want to talk about the Yankees. The Yanks, let's go to last week. Andrew Benintendi from the Royals. I mean, obviously, with the bat, Gallo and left's been a nightmare. Benintendi really cost them nothing. He's going to be a free agent. So would I be accurate in saying really limited risk, but could be a nice payoff?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, look, don't get me wrong, Steve. I don't like the Yankees, so it pained me to do this. But right. I got to give them an A-plus for that trade. You know, they gave up three pitchers, you know, two of whom are 23 and 24 and still an A-ball, which, frankly, let's call it what it is. That's usually not a good sign if you're that old and you're still an A-ball. You know, out of those three pitchers they gave up, maybe one of them eventually cracks a big league roster. So, yeah, there's nothing but upside in that deal. And even if he is a rental, he's exactly what the Yankees need. You know, that is such an all-or-nothing lineup that to have Benintendi now essentially be the left-handed DJ LeMahieu, a guy who can put one out occasionally but is going to be a contact hitter, not going to strike out, go gap to gap. You know, you can't be entirely all-or-nothing. And the Yankees have too much of that, in my opinion. So Ben Attendee is a breath of fresh air, you know, 320 hitter. That's exactly what they needed. And now they have one of those guys from each side of the dish. I mentioned LeMahieu is the righty, Ben Attendee is the lefty. So that was just a perfect trade for the Yankees, who gave up nothing to get one of the best contact hitters in the game.
They made a couple of moves today also. I mean, with the injury to Michael King at the back end of the bullpen, you knew an arm was coming. Scott Efros from the Cubbies, he's young. And this is, you know, they gave up Hayden Wesneski, who is a pretty hot prospect. So what's your read on this? Because you knew they were going to bolster the bullpen.
Yeah, the Efros deal looks good. I mean, you know, look, admittedly, I haven't watched a ton of him. But one thing that really stands out from what I've seen is his kind of sneaky delivery. You know, he does a really good job at almost hiding the ball until it comes out of his hand. And, you know, I think it can make him an effective reliever at times. Going to be tough from going to a Chicago team that's been out of it all year to the bright lights of New York in a pennant race. But when you look at the other deal that they pulled off too, bringing in Trevino, who's a more polished, established reliever, and then of course Frankie Montas to bolster the rotation and be their number two going into a playoff series. It's been really a great day, a great deadline for the Yankees. You know, they've avoided giving up Oswaldo Peraza. They've avoided giving up Volpe and Dominguez. You know, I mean, maybe Soto isn't on his way to the Bronx, but considering all the other pieces and all the other needs that they've addressed, it's been a really good deadline for your Yankees, man.
I'll tell you what, I feel for the A's fans. They're going to be the first pro team ever to draw dozens of people. It's just, it's painful. So prior, I mean, just as I got on today, I mean, I guess the latest buzz is the Astros are playing the Red Sox. Christian Vasquez, the catcher, is going to be traded from Boston to Houston, I guess. So he's going to basically have to walk across the locker room. I mean, what does that do for Houston, who's also been busy today?
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are having a great day. In addition to the Vasquez deal, they just pulled off a deal for Trey Mancini, who's probably going to, you know, place them first and definitely DH a lot for them. The Astros are all in. I love this deal. You know, Vasquez is a guy who I had my eye on a bit for the Mets as a potential package with him and J.D. Martinez. He's hitting 280 with 8 and, I believe, 41 ribeye steaks on the year. But for the Astros, you know, kind of similarly to the Mets, they've got a couple really good defensive catchers. Martin Maldonado, one of the best in the bigs. Jason Castro, serviceable as well. But they're not hitting a lick. And the Mets are in the same position with James McCann and Tomas Nito, both great defenders who are offensively challenged this season. So to get Vasquez over in Houston and to get Mancini in the same day. Now, I mean, you look at Mancini's numbers, and the power is definitely missing this year. This is a guy who's hit 30 home runs in the past. This year, you know, barely at double digits. But I saw a stat that if it weren't for Baltimore moving the fences back this year, Mancini would have like 19 home runs, I believe was the number at this point. So Houston, really favorable to righties who can pull the ball. Why Altuve's been, you know, donned a power hitter down there. I think Mancini is going to break out in Houston, and I think Vasquez is just getting a great situation. The Astros, man, they're the team to beat across the MLB right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, for those who are wondering about the problem their catchers are having at the bat, if you add up their averages, it's 290. I mean, they're really struggling. Obviously, a big story out here in the Northwest, the comeback by the Mariners after the terrible start. Julio Rodriguez obviously has lit the world on fire. And with Robbie Ray, their offseason pickup not doing great. Here they pick up Luis Castillo, the ace of the Reds. Missed the first month, but he's healthy. What about Seattle going bold as they try to end that 21-year playoff drought?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. You know, Seattle's gotten caught prospect hugging too many times in the past. Obviously, Diaz had that sensational year, and then they traded him to the Mets for a bunch of prospects. And, you know, no disrespect, I hope Jared Kalenich has a great career, but thus far, you know, we can say just by looking at his numbers, it hasn't panned out. So I'm glad that Seattle isn't too prospect happy right now, that they're going all in. That's what teams need to do, especially teams that haven't made the postseason in over two decades. This trade is perfect. I mean, now that they have Castillo, when you look at their starting rotation. You know, Logan Gilbert, Robbie Ray, Chris Flexen, Marco Gonzalez. The Mariners are the only team in baseball to have five starters with at least nine quality starts on the season. It's pretty remarkable. Now, I wouldn't say that they have the best rotation in baseball. I still think that, you know, the Mets with DeGrom back is better. I think that the Yankees have potential to be just as good with this Montas deal. The Astros have a great six-man rotation. But the Mariners are the only one, five guys, nine-plus quality starts. Now they've let everyone know, they've put the whole league on notice, that they're not content just making the playoffs. They're here to win in the playoffs. How do you win in the playoffs? With pitching. When it comes down to a short series, a five-game set, a seven-game set, pitching prevails, and the Seattle Mariners are right now in a position, I think, even more so than the Blue Jays, to compete with the Yankees or with the Astros come October.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun here in the Northwest. Lastly, I want to speculate. Obviously, you can't ignore Soto, well, unless the Nats do and keep him. But one of the guys I heard on CBS Sports Radio said, Pods, Cards, Dodgers. We know L.A.'s got an all-star lineup. So what are you hearing about the thought? And what are you hearing? And I guess, what about the thought if it was he, Machado, and Tatis came back? I mean, that wouldn't be a bad three middle of the order.
No, that would be a terrifying middle of the order. Right now, you know, I'm sticking with my guns on this one. Not too long ago, Jeff Passan, I believe just a few days ago, went on the Dan Patrick show and said he was leaning 80-20, meaning 80% Soto does get dealt. I've been sticking to my guns on this for a couple weeks now. I think Soto's going to be a National at 6:01 Eastern time tomorrow evening when the deadline passes. I don't think he's going anywhere. If he did go anywhere, the Dodgers would just be terrible for me and for the rest of, you know, MLB fans, the other 29 fan bases to see. I think it is between the Padres and the Cardinals. They, to me, have the best mix of prospects and major league ready talent that they'd be willing to send. In San Diego's case, guys like Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams. In the Cardinals' case, a guy like Libertor, maybe even a Carlson or a Tyler O'Neill. You know, I think that the Nationals want both MLB-ready talent and a boatload of prospects, and that the Padres and Cardinals can do it better than anyone. What's interesting, though, is, and like I said, I firmly believe Soto will be a National come August 3rd. So what's interesting is that when the winter rolls around, all of a sudden there are way more teams able to contend in a Soto trade because, A, you lose the desperation of the trade deadline, and, B, come December 15th, everyone who is drafted this year becomes eligible. So I think that that'll make it interesting for Soto and potentially Ohtani and their trade sweepstakes come the winter.
Folks, he's Joe Cirillo. Let me tell you something. Hell of an effort to keep all of that information together. Part of the Believe Podcast Network, host of the Cirillo Sports Talk podcast on Twitter. Follow along at the Joe Cirillo. Joe, really appreciate the time. Fun stuff, great stuff. Be well, and of course, as the season moves along, look forward to catching up again. Thanks a million.
Absolutely, Steve. It was a blast. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, have a good one.